Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly program questioning New York State leaders on a variety of issues. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution of the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And NISCASA, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign, online at nyscasa.org.
Welcome to the Capital Connection. I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us today is Albany County District Attorney David Soares. A Democrat, Soares was first elected in 2004 and recently survived what could have been called a bruising and perplexing primary to coast, to a third term. Soares is very important in that he's the DA who is responsible for prosecuting the bad guys in Albany. And we're delighted to have him here for that reason and many others. District Attorney David Soares, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
Great to see you. You had a primary against a guy named Kinlan. Did you expect to have a primary?
Well, what was interesting about this particular primary is it started so early. The campaign for the opposition started in March of 2011 when he had expressed his intentions to pursue this position. So we you know, of course, upsetting the apple cart as we did back in 2004. There are people with very long memories, and I suspect that so long as I'm in office, I will always have a challenge. But this did come from a pretty interesting place, and so we're just thankful that we were able to rise to the occasion.
You did something that I really liked a lot. You refused to prosecute some of the people from Occupy Albany, and I think that ran contrary to the governor's way of thinking of things. Do you think, is it possible the governor put your opponent up to this?
Well, you know, in my business, I hesitate to ever comment on anything without proof. Evidence is the bread and butter of our business, so I have no proof of that. But certainly, you could see that narrative being formed just in the ways that the entire campaign season took off.
Well, just to fully enjoy this a little bit more, when you did as well as you did in the primary against the old Albany establishment, the guys had been around for a long time and the rest of it, what did you bring from this, that Albany is not the same place that it once was?
I think there's always the electeds and the people who are, you know, in parentheses in quotes here, in the know, they always seem to underestimate the electorate. They seem to take the electorate, they take advantage of the electorate. We see that happening right now in national politics, and that's always been the case, I believe, here in Albany County. Albany County became a very progressive community. It's been a very progressive community for quite some time, and I think the establishment failed to recognize that.
So we have people like Patricia Fahey winning for the assembly. And it's not the old days when some Democratic power broker on high would sort of say, this is who your next assemblyman is. This is who your next district attorney is.
Well, you know, the county, Albany County, the Capital District, has become a complicated place with a lot of different issues. And you cannot expect, you know, the old structure, the old apparatus to continue to reign supreme as they had for a long time. And there are different voices coming from different corners offering, you know, the people alternatives. And I think it's great when you see Albany County finally have the diversity in its electeds that you're seeing now.
Well, so let's move on to a little bit. You have a third term now. Is there something that you've learned in the first two terms that you would concentrate on now?
Well, you know, every term has presented different challenges. And I think we have been in the office. We have a dynamic staff. I cannot speak enough about how great it is to go to a place and work with people that are always challenging themselves to be better. And so I think we've been ahead of the curve in terms of what's happening out there and our ability to respond to it. We were the first office to take on crimes that were occurring over the the internet. We've certainly worked over the last 8 years to develop that capacity within the organization, understanding our role too with respect to crimes that are occurring in other parts of the state, but we have jurisdiction, leveraging resources and being able to really take on some complicated cases.
Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure. One of the cases that I'm particularly proud of was a threat that was made here against an employee of the state comptroller. And this was emails that had been sent. And within 2.5 weeks, together with the Office of the State Comptroller and the FBI locally here, we were able to track down an IP address. And we were making an arrest in Brookline, Massachusetts.
Wow.
And so this was over, the course of a holiday. So to mobilize that many people and to bring resolution to a case like that, it's a case that I'm particularly proud of.
What was the motivation?
Well, there had been an organization that had wanted an investment placed with them.
Ooh.
And, the comptroller Dinopoli had restructured his office so as to eliminate any appearance of conflicts or conflicts. And he had inherited this particular proposal, and his staff declined it. And someone from the organization actually emailed a threat to the staff, and we were able to bring resolution to that case. That individual is now in a federal prison.
Wow.
Hopefully learning from his mistakes. But we also had a threat to then Governor Patterson. It was an email that was sent from a Brooklyn library, and within a matter of days, we were able to identify the IP address, leverage our relationships with some of our downstate partners, and bring that individual to justice. So the cases that are happening right now in the information superhighway, if you will, are the cases that are presenting the greatest challenges, but we're there meeting those challenges. And that's what I foresee in the next 4 years is presenting the clear and present dangers here in Albany County.
Now, you are in Albany County, of course, but I'm wondering whether or not you have the necessary resources as the sort of, in many ways, chief governmental watchdog. I've always felt that the legislature sort of starved the DA's office in Albany for a very good reason. The fewer employees you had, the fewer resources you had, the less you could really look at everybody.
That is a very frustrating issue for us. We accept our responsibilities, and we have a philosophy of one standard of justice, regardless of title. And over the years, I think we've developed a wonderful record of holding state elected officials accountable from our position. But, the Albany County taxpayer shouldn't be footing that bill every time. There's several investigations and cases that we have right now in the office that we have to devote our resources to addressing. But at the same token, you can't ignore it, because if you do, then if people start to believe that elected officials get a pass on things, it starts to erode confidence, and you cannot have your constituents not having faith in your process. So it's an issue that is frustrating. It's an issue that we wish the state legislature, who I believe the vast majority of them would also want to have that kind of, presence and want people to understand that there's integrity here. I would think that they would want to support our efforts here as well.
I don't know how this works, but is there a way that, because the legislature doesn't give you the resources you need, that you could go to the Ford Foundation or others to sort of help you find the money, or would that be conflictive?
Well, what I've learned over the years is that there are foundations that are interested in specific issues, for example, reentry or issues involving women or youth. The good government, resources for good government,
yeah.
I'm not familiar with those resources, but surely would take a look at them and certainly would apply for them, because it does tax our resources. And we are a small office with considerable jurisdiction and considerable responsibilities.
There is a new ethics operation in Albany called Jake Hope, which some people refer to as J-Joke, which is just one more iteration of the sort of pathetic attempts by the state to hold people who work for the state accountable. How do you work with them?
Well, we've not had the opportunity to engage in an investigation with this present body. But I, you know, having had vast experiences with their predecessors, I didn't find those relationships were not good. Based upon, you know, the history, specifically with their executive director at the time, I think that history between my office and that particular individual was well known. But you know, I don't take the view that every person who works in state government is somehow nefarious or has you know, ill-suited motives. I believe that there are individuals, like in any institution, that are geared that way. But I don't believe that a body that is constituted from that group, you know, should be working and doing the work that I think prosecutors all over the state have been doing and can do. So instead of having that body that's appointed by individuals who are within, you know, within state government, I do believe that those resources should be given to the DAs and allow for us to do our work.
And if you find, because you've been starved, and I think for a reason, by the government, so as not to be able to reach out and do more of this work, do you think that it's possible to ever get over this thing? I mean, to make it work?
I think that when it's going to take courage. I mean, we're living in new times, and I appreciate that. But I think it's going to take a lot of courage on the part of leadership to break away from tradition and say, look, you know, we want our constituents to have more faith and confidence in our system. So let's do this. And by doing this, I mean, let's create let's expand or enhance the public integrity unit within our local district attorney's office and let them do the work. Let us, you know, file our complaints or our concerns with them and let that grand jury and let those investigators, those professionals do the work, and they'll do it professionally.
Well, D.A. Soares, who I very much admire, I just want you to know that don't hold your breath. So let's talk about guns.
Sure.
Guns are huge as a subject. Now, you saw what happened here in New York. Everybody sort of getting together, you know, creating this law, which has cost Governor Cuomo and his ratings. And what do you think we should be doing?
Well, I think we should be having the right conversation. I'm watching, you know, the dialogue here, both nationally and locally. And it's a frustrating debate to observe because we're talking about public safety here. We're talking about weapons that are out in our communities that are being used to kill people.
And we see that here, don't we?
And we have, you know, we see this here. We've seen it, you know, in Newtown in such an extraordinarily tragic, you know, example. But we see that every day. And so the conversation here should be, hey, do we want people to, anyone to randomly go out and obtain, you know, high-capacity weapons and be in possession of them? I think everyone would agree that this is something that we shouldn't do.
Well, 79% of the population, according to one poll, so certainly thinks that. It's huge.
But you have the National Rifle Association and people really confusing, I believe, the issue here, and they're sending out, you know, this message about the erosion of the Second Amendment, which this is not about eroding the Second Amendment. I've been at this job now for quite some time, and you know what? We've never executed search warrants for a person who is, you know, lawfully in possession of a weapon, and we've never dragged that individual into an Albany County courthouse and prosecuted that person. That's not going to happen. We certainly respect, you know, the people's, you know, fundamental rights, but to suggest that government doesn't have any responsibility in terms of creating policy, you know, that would be strictly, you know, construed to enhance the safety of others, it's absurd. And so I watch, you know, the president of the NRA out there, you know, really stoking the flames here. And what I think he's doing is really appealing to a fringe, you know, the very fringe elements of our society. And I think that there are dangerous things that could flow from that. But we're not having the right conversation. The conversation should be whether or not we want people who are going to be purchasing weapons to A, go through a background check, whether, you know, people should have magazine capacities, you know, that are more than seven rounds, whether, you know, people who are in fact selling weapons, private citizens who are selling weapons, should in fact go through the same process as a gun dealer. And most importantly, whether or not people who are buying firearms over the internet, not firearms, but ammunition in high capacity over the internet, should be required to register. And I agree with all of those things. But it's a sensitive issue. Even in Albany County, that is a microcosm, I think, of the state of New York and then, you know, the country. You have our southern tiers, which are very rural. And, you know, weapons there are different than, you know, weapons here in the urban center of Albany. So I believe that people have the right to bear arms. I also believe that people should store their weapons safely. But I do support the governor and his efforts to make New York State a safe state and his efforts to continue the fine tradition that I think we've all been able to enjoy here in the state of New York.
Now, how you mentioned the state of New York, and I just want to know how you feel about the fact that this is not a federal. We did something probably quite right in New York State by limiting things, but everybody will tell you, hey, these guns are going to come in from Virginia, they're going to come in from North Carolina. How do you deal with that?
I've heard these arguments too, and just because we still have the issue of the other states that impact on us, I don't think that's a good enough reason to not take the steps that we're taking here in New York. Now, having said that, I do believe that our Congress has to act. You know, New York is doing the best that New York can do to keep its citizens safe. But when you are living in a state like Virginia or some of our other southern states that don't have the same philosophy that we do, and these weapons continue to flow into our communities and cause the kind of havoc that they're causing in our communities, I think it's imperative that our Congress acts in a way that will ensure that hey, if you want to live in a state that has a more liberal view on weapons, then it's okay to live there. But those views shouldn't impede in our abilities to make our communities and keep our communities safe.
We're talking to Albany County District Attorney David Soares. I wanted to ask you about the effect of drugs on our criminal society. I mean, you're a progressive guy. On the other hand, you're no nonsense when it comes to putting people in jail who do either shoot other people or who do drugs or the rest of it. Have you done some in-depth thinking about what we should do about our drug laws?
Well, you know, the interesting thing about our drug laws is that I think all of us have a family member or someone that we know that's either been impacted by the use of drugs or alcohol. And, you know, that's a public health issue. And sometimes when you have the convergence of public health and public safety, you have to step back and approach the issue, you know, in a different way. I think drug courts have helped. I think that drug courts have helped, but it's also tragic in many ways that people have to break the law or get involved in the criminal justice system before they're receiving treatment. Outside of the criminal justice system, there are very few places that people can actually go, especially when you're talking about the issue of medical insurance, that people can go to receive treatment. So that's something that we have to take a look at. But I do believe, and I believe in supporting alternatives to incarceration, we've got far too many issues to be dealing with respect to violence, with respect to sexual assault on women and children, with respect to financial exploitation of our seniors, to be worrying about protesters, and to also be spending a lot of time dealing with people with chemical addictions.
So let me get this straight, Mr. District Attorney. If you find somebody who is just because they have drugs, I think I'm hearing you say there have to be alternatives.
There has to be.
Yeah. But if you find somebody who is dependent on drugs who now, you know, shoots somebody, that's a whole different story.
That's a whole different story. And, you know, certainly, you know, the person's mental health and addiction or things that are taken into consideration under those circumstances. But you can't, you know, you can't commit crimes and expect to just say, oh, I have a drug problem, and all of a sudden that's going to mitigate your culpability or somehow receive you know, a sentence that's different than what a person that's similarly situated but not addicted would receive. But in terms of just your standard cases that are coming into the criminal justice system, you know, the person who's exchanging, letting their cars be used in exchange for crack cocaine, and then filing a report, you know, that the car was stolen. I mean, cases like that, you have to take a different approach. We do not have the capacity in our local jails. We do not have the capacity in our prison systems to be dealing with a lot of those cases. And so partnering with institutions outside of the criminal justice systems is a way for us to solve some of these problems. And so we need to have more resources. You know, now there's discussions about coming from our chief judge, Lipman, who's got wonderful ideas and on many fronts, many of which I agree with. But there's discussions about age 16 and 17-year-old kids not being prosecuted in adult courts. You know, that's a great, you know, thing. I think it's politically unassailable. But you know, for those local communities like Albany County, for example, if we stop doing that, are we going to see some resources coming in from the state that would allow for us to create more, you know, programs for youth to steer them away from crimes? I think there has to be more discussions as well in this regard. There's a lot of elected state officials that have great ideas, but we have to start focusing now on how those ideas are impacting on local communities. I know that I'm saving the state a lot of money by not sending people with chemical addiction to state prison. But we need to see some of those dollars that we're saving the state come back to our local communities to be able to provide better care for people.
Now, we don't have a lot of time, but how important are gangs in your jurisdiction?
Gangs are very important. I think in every jurisdiction that is similar to Albany County, we're all experiencing the same problems. You're experiencing the problem of individuals coming together, controlling, you know, in some instances, the drug trade, controlling, you know, they're getting a lot of young girls to prostitute themselves, and they're taking over, you know, local communities. And the gang problem is a serious problem here in Albany County, as it is in Troy, as it is in Schenectady. And, you know, coming at these gangs with tougher sentences and interdiction, it's great. But we also have to remember that if you're not coming at these gangs also with alternatives, so that 10-year-old kid, that 11-year-old kid isn't going to be steered in that direction, we're always going to be battling this issue. So I would encourage more investment into Boys and Girls Clubs, the YMCA, and organizations that are dealing with youth.
I got one last question for you, and I thank you for being so forthright in all of your answers, and that is, you got a mayor here, longtime mayor, Jerry Jennings. You have not always seen eye to eye. How are things going?
I have a good relationship with the mayor. In my position, you cannot afford to have bad relationships with any elected official, because you need one another in order to achieve the greater good for your constituents. And so Mayor and I have worked on several issues involving youth, involving the schools, that really got us talking after years of not having any communication. So I have a very good relationship with him, and we continue to work together in order to address these issues involving our youth here in the city. So I'm very pleased with that.
Well, David Soares, I'll tell you what I'm always pleased with, that you're willing to come in here and talk to us and be as forthright as you are. Our guest on the Capital Connection has been Albany County District Attorney David Soares, a Democrat who recently began his third term.
Thank you very much.
The Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. Ian Pickus is producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC, Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for the Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org. And Niskasa, the New York State Coalition Against Sexual Assault, working to support men in their decisions to end sexual violence with the My Strength Is Not For Hurting campaign. Online at nyscasa.org.